I was surprised how much fun I actually had. I don't think it really sort of tells a new story, but it kind of tells it from a slightly different perspective that makes it pretty engaging. And I think that is down to the enthusiasm that the main characters bring to each of their roles.
The movie literally starts and in seconds there's a knife going in an eyeball, and it just doesn't really let up.
You can't help but be on their side, even if being on their side involves Brad Pitt stabbing a German in the eye.
Yeah. Somewhere between a character investigation piece of a small group and Rambo.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. Today I'm joined by Jay.
Woohoo!
Tony.
Well, hello.
And War Daddy Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about Fury.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of Flix Watcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Tony and Jay. If you please could say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Sure thing. Yeah, hi, my name's Tony Gordon. I'm the creative director at GeoPro UK, former slash current host of How to Write a Tune and a couple of other podcasts that I do very occasionally. And yeah, Jay's business partner.
I'm that business partner, Jay. I'm managing director of GeoPro UK and have also guested on a few of those podcasts that Tony mentioned. We're a podcast production company and have helped many, many, many businesses throughout the world kind of launch podcasts and maintain shows and get into content creation across the board.
Well, one thing we should say at this point is that you guys helped out FlixWatcher from the start. So for the first year or so, you guys were our editors. Thank you very much. We wouldn't be here 200 odd episodes down the line if it wasn't for you guys.
And very cool as well. We guested way back when on those early single and double digit shows. And so cool that we're now in the 200s. It's amazing.
Indeed. Cheers. Yeah.
It's one of the things, because we hadn't released any episodes at that point, but we knew each other anyway, so it wasn't that much of a gamble. So we knew we liked each other and stuff like that. But it was at that kind of stage where we didn't really have any episodes to listen to. And people were taking a massive punt on joining this, guesting this podcast. But we're always very grateful for those guys, those early innovators, of which you are one of them as well.
Well, you know, it's also a lot harder. It was a harder ask back when FlixWatch first started, because Netflix just wasn't full of the amazing content it is today. It was, when we were looking on it, we were having to sift through to find kind of movies back then, and it would be Police Academy 4 and Speed 2 or something.
That is really true. The context of the show has actually changed quite a lot since then, because of the quality of Netflix's library versus back then, I think. Is that something that comes up often?
Well, I mean, you guys came on for The Talented Mr. Ripley and The One. I think everyone across the board will say The Talented Mr. Ripley is a fine film. The One is it's not niche, but there are definite fans and definite detractors. And it was wholly my kind of film had I been 15, and still I enjoyed it at 30 or however old I was at that point. We do get, but I think since those early days, we try and steer the conversations to films that are just better, because it just makes for a more fun record.
I think Netflix have helped.
Well, I mean, back when we were on the first on the show, Netflix wasn't making any of its own content, right? There wasn't any of the streaming wars or anything like that. When we were looking for, we nearly went for, let's just go for Jim Carrey movies. Because, and I think if anything, this being invited back on the show has definitely prompted me and Tony are going to go heavily down a big Jim Carrey rabbit hole very soon.
Well, we've had a Jim Carrey. We've had that documentary.
Great Beyond, Jim and Andy.
That was great.
Not one of his actual films as yet. Oh, no, we've had The Truman Show. Jim and Andy, which is probably like my top Jim Carrey there in those two.
What about?
And is that when he's full method? He's full in Andy Kaufman and it was like lost footage that wasn't released for an awful long time. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. That's on Netflix right now.
Yep.
and the show just keeps giving value.
Yeah, yes. That's a Netflix documentary, that one, so that will always be there.
Yeah, it's really good. I think it's definitely better than the end product of Man on the Moon, because I think Man on the Moon, I don't really know much about Andy Kaufman, so I kind of didn't really get it all, but watching the documentary...
Didn't the biopic tell you anything about Andy Kaufman?
Yeah, but I saw that after.
Okay.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, at
and
the
it's,
time, though.
It's a kind of like a really interesting, like, fly-on-the-wall view of the insanity of filmmaking and just how mad it was working with Jim Carrey when he became kind of possessed by the spirit of Andy Kaufman, and poor old Milos Forman is just like, you just have to watch it for him just despairing about what to do.
Just riding the lightning as a director as this star spins off the planet underneath you. Okay, I guess this is, we're just going, keep rolling.
Well, we're going too far down the rabbit hole with another film, but let's bring it back to the film we're talking about today, which is Fury. Who chose Fury?
I think that was me. Yes, that was me.
You think that was you?
I think so.
That was Tony there. Tony, can you tell us why you chose it? And also, since you came on 200 episodes ago, we have less than 60 seconds to give the synopsis, because we'll spoil it in the rest of the discussion anyway. So
yeah, no problem. So 60-second synopsis. Fury is a movie about a cohort of tank people that ride a tank. I don't know what they're called. Tank people. People riding a tank. who are in Nazi Germany, and it's the end of the war, and it is a story of their relationship and how it develops as things get really bad. I guess it's probably the best way of putting it, right?
That's fine. Why did you choose it?
I chose it because it has a lot of really awesome actors and odd actors really going for it together. It's one of those movies where I'm like, everyone is really trying their hardest. Whether maybe too much at points, I buy it. I love it. I think I don't think it happens too much.
Well, I've got to think about that, because this is the first time I've seen it. One of those actors being Shia LaBeouf, and we'll talk to the other actors later. But this is quite a muted Shia LaBeouf performance, from my opinion. What do you reckon for him?
I think it's muted in the sense, yeah, I know what you mean. It's not too out there. However, it is committed. It is like, yeah, the scratch on his face is real. And like he Shia LaBeouf the role. And I don't know, there's an emotion in his eyes.
But I think there's a subtlety to it. I think that's what's kind of great is he's doing the usual LaBeouf. I like that. That should definitely be just a term now that we use in the vernacular. Okay. Oh, he LaBeoufed it. He's really, really deep in that role. It's just not a big, character he's playing almost. So although it feels like a muted Shia-like performance, he's full in. Like Tony said, he was cutting his cheek every time that needed to be filmed. You know, there's makeup.
Yeah. And it's good these days.
Helen, you've been a bit quiet.
I had not seen this film before. I'd been aware of it, but I hadn't seen it. It just never had really... I mean, Netflix said it was like a 59% match, which is probably quite iffy.
We need to start tracking these, because it'd be quite interesting to see what people bring onto Netflix versus what Netflix thinks we should like.
I would never even look at a Netflix rating before watching something, because I don't trust people enough.
Oh, yeah, I don't trust them. I just want to know how much it matches.
It's like,
you got it right. Sorry.
So, I mean, I was surprised how much fun I actually had watching it. It's kind of quite a strange film in that I don't think it really sort of tells a new story, but it kind of tells it from a slightly different perspective that makes it pretty engaging, even if it is pushing the 2-hour mark. And I think that is down to the enthusiasm that the main characters bring to each of their roles. They're kind of a little bit stereotyped and a bit off the chart with their macho-ness, but you just can't help but be on their side, even if being on their side involves Brad Pitt stabbing a German in the eye or machine gunning Nazis down for fun and like going, yeah! It's a strange little film, but I had a lot of fun with it, with the tank people. Tank people.
From here on outwards, they'll be known as tank people.
Crew. They're a crew, right? That's what
it is. Crew, yeah. And their little tank called Fury and the other tank friends with their names. I mean, Shy is an interesting one. I mean, I've kind of always found his career a little bit interesting. He's not having a great time of late, and
that's self-imposed, though, isn't it?
It is, and I hope he sorts himself out before affecting anyone else. But yeah, intense performance probably brings more intenseness than the script probably required. And, you know, I think that kind of makes sense, where the, I'm pretty sure it would not have been in the script to cut your own face in every time a shot. And that kind of comes through in it. So yeah.
I can imagine David Ayer, the director, going, "Shai, why are you doing this? I was telling you, just you don't need to. No one's going to notice. You're being silly now."
What if I touch my face? I want it to hurt. I want to flinch. Ah. And I get it. Actually, conceptually, that I sort of get, because if you are, I don't know, actors probably don't actually touch their face that much while acting. It's not a thing you should do, I'd imagine. But if you would want that natural flinch.
Jay, what about yourself? You seen it before?
Yeah, I love this. What I like about this movie is the watchability of it. It's intense, like Saving Private Ryan. It's got that same sort of like desolate feel to it, where you know that nothing particularly is going to come of this, but it's also a war movie. You shouldn't be sat there with a bunch of hope. But like you say, you've got a camaraderie there where you want them to win. And even though they're clearly all bad people, are they being bad people because they're in a war, or are they inherently bad people? And I think when you look around the tank people or the tank crew, you're not sure. I'm not sure if I'm sure Brad Pitt's a lovely guy, but I'm not sure if Brad Pitt's character,
War Daddy,
how could I forget? I'm not sure if War Daddy is like a bad guy or having to be bad when he's making but when he's making the new tank crew member actually murder essentially a POW, he's doing it to break the guy's cherry or something, so there isn't a weak link with this very small crew they have, which could put everyone in danger. I understand the morality behind that is completely flipped on its head, and was he trying to do a good thing by teaching this young person to kill? I don't know. But then just sitting there and having that question pretty much about every character that you see is very impressive to have that in such a small cast.
It's quite interesting. I think I've rarely seen it presented as that you have to toughen up quickly, otherwise there's no chance you're going to survive. And that was a tough scene, I thought, with Brad making him get that German SS soldier on his knees and get the kid that they called Machine at the end to shoot him because he was too green around the gills. And I can understand that if everyone's not pulling their weight in a situation like that, then you've got no chance whatsoever. And they were one of the last remaining tank people on planet Earth, from what I understand. so he's doing something right there. But there was compassion there as well, especially when that scene when they went into the house with the women. Mm-hmm. Even though it's still rapey, because he wouldn't have had sex with that young girl had they not gone in and said, "By the way, you take him in there, you take her in there, otherwise I will." So that didn't need to happen. But then when the other guys came in, the other tank people came in, it could have escalated to a scene which was really traumatic.
It showed the level of it, right? It showed the sort of the scale of escalation in the situation. Yeah. And yeah, it was creepy. Really creepy.
It is creepy, especially after such an intense, as you said, Helen, the movie literally starts and in seconds there's a knife going in an eyeball, and it just doesn't really let up that much until that scene when they've taken him a town and they're in a building with this mother and daughter, as far as you can tell. And because it slows down so suddenly from just being pitched really, really high on the edge of your seat, and is something going to happen, and it suddenly stops, you don't really feel like it has stopped. I sat the whole time, I remember sitting there being like, "Oh, ja, 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 is this going to be okay? Oh, no, more people have arrived. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay." But it's that morality constantly flipping between, like you say, he's literally just kind of pushed one guy on this girl. That's okay because of the way he's done it. However, he's then protecting them when more of his tank team come in drunk. Dodgy lines.
And at the very beginning of that scene, he's the creepy guy. If you remember, he's the come and stand over here, and it's very odd because he then becomes the good guy throughout the scene in terms of flips around.
But to still root for these people. Root for these people right to the end, and for them being faced against insurmountable odds and still wanting them to survive when you've seen each one of them do something absolutely horrendous. It's very cleverly made.
Helen, let's talk about the rest of the cast, the Tank People cast. Start with your, I don't know, who do you want to lead us out with?
My favourite, Michael Pena, who's just great in everything.
Pena.
Yeah. I always get his name wrong. That's how much I love him. yeah, always welcome to see him in anything he does. And then it's your man from The Walking Dead.
John, I can't remember his name.
John.
The Punisher
himself, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Who I probably think he's probably the most unhinged of them all, isn't he? I mean, from anything, from his looks.
That's why he's set out, portrayed, you know, you're the weird one. You're the loose cannon.
Yeah.
And then the occasional appearance of Jason Isaacs with his scary face. So there's kind of like a few sort of big names that pop up. And then obviously Brad, who I think when I started watching it, I was a bit like, oh, I'm not really buying Brad Pitt in this. But then partway through, I don't know what it was. I was like, okay, I've accepted Brad Pitt is War Daddy and he is, you know, the tank master and, you know, he knows all about how to make tanks fight each other and everything. and then, yeah, I guess the unspoken star is Fury, the undefeatable tank that manages to withstand every single bullet and grenade and rocket launcher.
Lots of glancing shots.
Lots of ricochets. Oh, my God.
And it's the soundproofing in that bad boy as well is incredible. So, yeah, it's a great ensemble cast. The rookie, I've forgotten what his
who
name was.
I always thought he looked like a young Christian Slater to me.
So I've seen him in The Perks of Being a Wallflower. That was I've seen him in. I mean, he does kind of well of playing that kind of wet-eyed, terrified,
I'm in the
wrong place, help me out kind of situation. I think this film probably is fairly accurate in a lot of things that happened. And, you know, we've kind of mentioned the uncomfortable, coercive sex scene / rape scene. It was probably much worse than that. And
oh, yeah, I've no doubt. It's,
no doubt.
Situations
no doubt.
Were worse.
And there's not that many films that have really kind of tackled that sort of side of it. It sort of kind of like skirts around what happens to, you know, the people in these towns that were kind of not really on either side. And, you know, the signs on the bodies piling up and, you know, the people eating the horses, that's all stuff that we've known happened. So fair play for it, for really going for it.
I don't think I'd really seen that kind of like strategic side of things as well. Like I remember when Saving Private Ryan came out and the other war movie that came out at the same time, The Thin Red Line.
Yeah.
I think they both kind of came out at similar sort of times. That was the first time I'd seen certain bits of World War II where, you know, small groups of people were running through and actually what that seemed like as opposed to just huge battles happening or aerial battles or something like that. I don't think I've ever really seen tank combat. I didn't know you had to get behind people. I didn't know any of those bits and pieces. They're kind of splitting out. And always interesting to see something like that. It's so much power, but it's all really quite slow. Like battleships. It's all really quite slow. Like,
yes.
So everyone's got huge guns, but no one's really zooming around. It's not the most exciting thing. But I enjoyed how they managed to get the kind of level of sort of anticipation and excitement going in such a slow battle. But I do hark back to what you're saying, Helen, as well, is it did feel, I just didn't feel like that tank was going to get hit by anything that was going to blow up those five people. Like at no point did I think that, you know, sure, a bullet's going to hit that and a grenade might bounce off it, but we're going to be okay for at least another 90 minutes every time something bounced against it.
Well, there's some fights which I thought, well, first of all, it looked like the laser guns sometimes, didn't it?
The tracer rounds, yeah. And I was thinking that watching it, I was thinking, did they have tracer rounds in World War II? I don't think they did.
And did they specifically have red ones for Allies and green ones for Germans? Like,
have you been watching Star Wars? So some visual flares look really good, and going to some of the scenes, I say tanks don't move that fast, so therefore they're not that engaging. But also, there's the extra added jeopardy of the guys, the tank commanders, War Daddy in the case, actually hanging his head outside the tank, like directing everyone instead of being safer inside. And I just thought, that's clearly a design flaw, because the German tanks, no one was hanging off the edge of the tanks; they were all inside, safer. So if you're making tanks in the future, build enough space where everyone can sit inside comfortably. That'll be my first comment.
It's like at the end when he's got the big 50 cal gun.
Yeah.
And the only way to do it is just a stand where you're pretty much visible from every direction. Okay. I mean, it is a big gun. It is good fun.
And what do you guys make of the Turning J of the rest of the cast?
I thought it's one of those films where Michael Peña acts. Rather than plays Michael Peña. And I like that because he can act and he's really good, but he doesn't always get the chance to, because they often, Ant-Man, go be Michael Peña, right? Rather than go try something different. But I really like all of them, if I'm honest. And even, like, they're all... The casting was done, in, like you say, Punisher, John, what's his name? When you've got that group together and they're all a bit evil-ish and they're all a bit odd and you need someone to just be the clear and distinct really odd evil guy, he's such a good casting to come in there. I got this, don't worry about it. I could just, you know, smudges on my face and I'll pull it together. So no, I always like him. Who else we got? I bought the kid sold it, is what sells the movie. I think if it was just those five in the tank, like four in the tank, rah, 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 and it would just be a bit of a macho mess, but the kid brings the narrative. And then that macho mess actually sort of falls to pieces because you see them all cry at some point pretty much. So I see a lot of people calling it like just a macho movie, and it does have that, but I don't get that from it, if that makes sense.
I got that as part of this whole facade. Like, you know, everyone's having to put on a facade. Like, no one in World War II, there wasn't these hulking armies that fought, right? It was a lot of people who were plumbers and bakers and candlestick makers who were suddenly in the throngs of war. And, like, I when I saw that, like, hyper-machoism, yeah, I get it. If I'm going to hang out in a tiny little tin can and people are going to try and kill us all day long and our job is to, like... go and be murderous and such, surely we all lean into this and be horrible to each other. I mean, they're constantly slapping each other around. It's past horseplay as of just being horrible to each other. But it seems like they're keeping it mean almost. Mm. Keeping it mean so the outside isn't quite as bad.
I did enjoy that one character piece with John Bernthal's character and Machine. And he just said, look, we're all bad guys. I think you're a good one. Just to kind of level set that, they feel that perhaps they've gone a bit too far, or the things they've experienced and witnessed, they're way over the line, but they need to keep there. Otherwise, if they relax, then everything's going to go wrong. And one thing Hannah was saying about the Jason Isaacs character, Brad Pitt's war daddy was very keen to move on to the next mission. At no point did he just say, look, can we just chill out can we have a night and then go the next day? It was like, okay, yeah, we'll do it. No, it's all right. No worries. Yeah, well.
You got some bourbon biscuits? Yeah. Like, maybe we could sit down, we could tell some stories. Yeah. I don't know.
And that must
I like Jason Isaacs as the sort of local commander type.
Charlie.
I could see him doing that for a while.
Is there anything else, guys, you want to say before we head to the scores?
I guess I was going to just sort of say that in terms of David Ayer's work, I've only really seen End of Watch, I think, which I really, really loved. So this was kind of like my second adventure in this, and there are some moments where you're kind of taken out of it with some of the pacing is interesting. The bit for the final showdown, there's quite a clear gap between the arrival of the soldiers and the spotting of the soldiers, and some day to night transitions that was something that you'd think, how were we daylight and how were we nighttime?
How did we miss this?
Which, I mean, I don't know whether they were intentional or I'm not really sure, but there was moments like that where it's like, okay, I am going along with it, but it kind of, it's that tricky balance be sort of, this is noticeable to the point where it's a little bit like, oop, a bit funny. And I feel that had it not had those moments in, it probably would be a little bit more kind of, people would maybe talk about it more, or maybe people would give it a chance rather than just like write it off. Because I think I'd pretty much written it off as being a bit crap and not really interesting. So it walks a fine line between actually being quite interesting and really good and then being kind of a little bit silly with moments like that.
Yeah. So somewhere between a character investigation piece of a small group and Rambo.
I just wanted to pull a comment on David Ayer's filmography, because he has written a lot of just amazing films.
Yeah, he's got an interesting mix in there.
Yeah,
as a writer,
Training Day being like the one that when I found out he wrote that, I was like, well, we've had Training Day, and it was one of my favourite films ever. He's written a fair few of my favourite films, but then if we lean into his directorial films, End of Watch, as Helen said, is brilliant. Michael Peña in there. My first, that was probably my first, was that Michael Peña in that?
Yeah.
So I think that was the first time I saw Michael Peña. I was like, I hope we see more of this guy. So I'm glad we do. But then again, the Suicide Squad is a down. Is a down.
Yeah. Hopefully the momentum at Warner Brothers of the success of rebooting things a little bit. You never know. We might see a better version of Suicide Squad one day, but is it worth it? They're already making the sequel, sort of reboot sequel anyway, so probably not, right?
Yeah, with a guy who probably knows how to, well, James Gunn, who they probably trust to make these films. But I think David Ayer was just, I feel there's a good film in there, and I feel it was taken away from him, and perhaps unfairly. You never know the ins and outs of these things, but...
No, I know he's quite bitter about it.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
I hear the stories lots of times. You know, Josh Trank, his Fantastic Four film, is not supposed to be the film that he wanted. And I feel gutted because his film before that was one of my favourite films ever, even though I've forgotten the name.
Chronicle, right?
Chronicle, yes, exactly. Yeah. And Chronicle, I thought, was absolutely outstanding. And I was so excited for Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And it was just wasn't good. So anyway.
But this I think is the thing is, when there's that much of a budget involved, like there's definitely too many cooks. And there kind of should be, because there's so many cooks is money. So, I do get it. But it just feels like Warner Brothers have never quite... It feels like they get a great idea to go through something like Suicide Squad, and we're going to get David Ayer to do it, and people are going like, what? David Ayer, the guy who wrote Training Day? And they're like, yeah, he's going to do that. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be dark and gritty. And it feels like they make the movie, and at some point they open a door to another bunch of executives who weren't part of any of that conversation. And they're like, oh, wow, that's very dark. What was David Ayer thinking? Let's get rid of that. More Harley Quinn. She's famous. And just tear it to pieces. Whereas Marvel don't do that. It feels like they're all part of the original conversation, and they decide which way they're going to go and then follow it through.
Yeah. Mm. On that note, let's head to the scores.
Hello, folks. I'm Sam.
And I'm Martin.
And every week for the last 5 years, we've got together to talk about the musician Tom Waits.
He's a gravelly voice singer that sounded like he doused his vocal cords in bourbon and set fire to them with a cigarette and wrote such classic songs as Way Down in the Hole, Downtown Train, Jersey Girl.
He's also the gravelly voiced actor from films such as The Ballad of Buster Scruggs and Seven Psychopaths, both of which coincidentally are on Netflix, and both of which Kobe and Helen have discussed here on FlixWatcher.
So make sure you check those episodes out. And when you have a little bit of a taste for the magic that is Tom Waits, why not head over to songbysongpodcast.com or search for Song by Song in your podcatcher of choice to listen to a little bit more about Tom Waits.
Welcome to the return to the FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores, as always, are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, please, Tony, with your recommendability.
Recommendability 4.
You really went for that one.
I don't have to explain myself, right?
you can do if you want, but if you don't want to. Jay.
Recommendability. I'm going to go, and it's out of 5, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a solid 4 as well, because it's one of the better war movies. It's also a great Brad Pitt movie, without necessarily being a Brad Pitt movie.
Yeah,
I think that's fair.
Helen?
Not quite a 4. I'm going to do a 3.7. I had a lot of fun with it, but there'd be kind of quite specific caveats to recommending it. And I feel that it probably wouldn't be for a lot of people. I mean, it's pretty violent for a start, and it's kind of pretty dark. And I think I mentioned briefly, there's a couple of moments in the direction which kind of take it a little bit, you know, Saving Private Ryan sort of standard direction that some people will kind of forgive and go along with, but for other people there'd be a bit, nah, it's a bit silly, or it's, you know, the things like the ending, you kind of have to go in full in to accept that.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of ridiculous, and I think for some people it would be a bit of a stretch and they just take it too seriously.
So 3.7.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for, this is a film I know I'm going to like in David Ayer and enjoying most of the cast. It's one of those films that I just never got around to watching, and I know it's been on Netflix for a while. It's been there and I'm like, not today. Yeah, not today. and I can understand that. And I think I'm going to give it you know, 3.5 because I really enjoyed it, but it's still a film. I don't think it's one of those films you can kind of go, yeah, it's a war film and it is a bit machoistic and I'm not sure it's telling necessarily a better story than Saving Private Ryan. And I think the film I compare this to mostly is Memphis Belle, but I haven't seen that for years. Mm. And that's set in a B-52 kind of bomber. And also recently watched Catch 22, which was on Channel 4, which I thought was fantastic. Again, guys kind of stuck in a bomber together over a longer period of time. So, yeah, 3.5. It's a decent film, but I think it's hardest to recommend. Repeat viewing score, Tony.
Repeat viewing score. I mean, I don't watch it that often. I was happy to watch it again, but it's not one I watch religiously. So let's say a 3.4.
How many times have you watched it, do you reckon?
3 or 4 times, probably.
Okay.
Yeah. It's one of those, I caught it really early when it came out. I don't know, didn't know any hype about it. I knew nothing about it. I just randomly watched it and was like, that was an excellent movie. Where did that come from? You know? And so I've sort of come back to it a bunch of times since then.
Jay?
I have to go pretty high here because I've watched this probably 2 or 3 times in 2020 alone. Oh. because it comes up in a few of my lists. Like if I go and fall down a war movie rabbit hole, this will be on it. If I go and fall down a Brad Pitt, if I fall down his rabbit hole, I'm going to do it. Shia LaBeouf. These are all kind of routes that I take, and this movie ends up on as kind of a cafe stop on a lot of those routes. So I'm going to go for like a 4.4 because I do watch it a lot, but it might not be one of the movies I watch the most.
Helen?
I mean, I'm not in a rush to watch it again. It's probably going to be quite low on my rewatchability list of ones that I return to. But that said, if like someone really wanted to see it and they hadn't seen it and I was with them, I'd be like, yeah, right then. I didn't not enjoy the company of it. It's just probably not something I'd actively return to. So a 3.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 3 as well. I'll get back to it at some point, but I'm not in a rush. And I think it'd be better to get back to that. Not today. and I think of the war movie genre, there'll be ones I want to return to more frequently, even though they are ostensibly harsh to watch. I think obviously Saving Private Ryan being the pinnacle of that ilk. Small screen score, Tony.
It's quite a lot of cool looking tank stuff, isn't there? So it's not going to be that great on small screen.
Where did you watch it the first time?
On my huge television, probably. I don't think I saw it at the cinema.
Yeah, so you didn't watch this. And by small screen, we just mean TV, not the cinema.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
How big is your television?
In that sense, then I don't think it's not a cinema necessity, but I'm sure it would have been good at the cinema. Small screen, let's go 4. Let's give it a nice 4.
Jay?
I'm going to go for a 3.5 because I have only seen this on the small screen. But with all those awesome laser bullets that everyone shoots, I bet it would have been awesome, awesome on a big screen.
Helen?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting one because I would never, ever have paid to go to the cinema to see this. So it's not something that I would have actively gone to the cinema to see. And I don't know, it's kind of a weird one because obviously it's pretty kind of loud and in your face. And I don't know. I don't know whether I'd have enjoyed it or more, or I don't think the size of the screen has really made a difference to it at all. So I'm going to say 5. I think it's if you want to see it, watch it on Netflix. Don't really worry about the size of your screen. Just turn up the volume, I guess. It's like really loud.
Headphones in and on your iPhone.
Yeah, I don't think I've watched any war films in the cinema. Your man Christopher Nolan.
Ah, yeah, me too.
Yeah,
so Saving Private Ryan, definitely saw that in the cinema.
Yeah, when people told me about the first scene of Saving Private Ryan, I shat myself just at the prospect and didn't want to watch it.
I just shat myself, and that was my experience with it, and it would have been a really strange story.
Still haven't seen the movie.
I think I'm going to give it the highest one because I'm not, if it came out again as a reissue, I don't think I'll be drawn to watch it. So let's go for 4.5. Engagement score, Tony?
Engagement? Yeah. It's pretty harrowing. So engaging and harrowing are vaguely the same thing in my mind. 4.5.
I'm going to go real high on this and go for like 4.8 because I think it's one of those movies I won't turn off once it's started. I know it's going to be a really miserable journey, and I want to follow that journey through.
Helen?
I was really surprised by this film. I had completely written it off and would never, ever, ever have seen it had you not have suggested it. And I found that I was pretty engaged throughout the whole film. There was some bits that were a little bit slow and the pacing was a bit weird, which I mentioned. But yeah, it's you kind of want to know what happens. You can kind of maybe guess who lives and who dies and a bit like that. But it's actually really engaging, and I didn't like do the whole for is it finished yet for its whole runtime. So yeah, 4.5.
Fair enough. Yeah, I could give it a 4. It was decent. I wasn't looking at my phone. I did think, I was like, oh, is it over 2 hours? Well, let's just get started. And the time didn't fly by, but at the same time, I wasn't really clock watching either. So I'm going to go for 4. That gives an overall score of 3.98750, just under, a shade under the 4 mark.
Solid.
It's pretty good. I was honestly really surprised by it. I thought it was going to be awful.
After last time, I'm glad I could bring something to the table that you actually enjoyed, because wasn't the reaction we got from the one.
That film is so bizarre. I've not rewatched that. Sorry,
I was going to say, has been time tested on that, and now you're actually we watch this once a year. It's my Christmas movie.
Sadly, not. But it's not like the worst. It's not the lowest scoring film either. So I think it did all right.
Oh, it's nowhere near the lowest scoring film.
Time has been kind to it.
Let's head over to Twitter, guys. To everyone who's listening, do follow us on Twitter. We are at FlixWatcherPod. And the main reason to follow us is because we do ask for shout-outs before going into recording. And such as this, we put a tweet saying, we're reviewing Fury with Jay Ludgrove and Tony Gordon from GL Productions. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts and the score out of 5, and we'll give you a shout-out. And we had a few responses here. Tony, as you chose the film, do you want to pick a response?
Sure thing. Eric Thomas said, I did like that movie. The most powerful moment to me was the scene with Shia's character, that a Bible-thumping fundamentalist Christian comforts a dying man. It'll give it 4 out of 5 stars. Face scraped off the interior of a tank.
Yeah, that was quite grim, that scene.
That was a dark moment, wasn't it? Yeah. I was like, oh, when are you going to see like a bit of his head? When are you going to see? And I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. There it is.
We've got here from Steve, EILFM podcast, and 4 stars. Interesting take on World War II film with a kind of hyper-masculinity, but intense moments throughout, and I really liked it. Go on, Steve. Good shout.
And Helen, taking on your spouse.
Yeah, so this is Rhys Hayward, my husband, who sat through this film, which... is an achievement in itself. all a bit macho, but watchable. 3 stars.
Fair play. Tony and Jay, can you tell everyone who's listening where they can find you? And we'll say sayonara to everyone who's taking the time.
You can find me at Jay Ludgrove, at Jay Ludgrove, pretty much everywhere. Also, we release a bunch of content on GL Pro UK, and check out our podcast, GL Cast, where we have a number of different shows under there, one being my show, The Jay Lee Show.
And I make most of that content, but I also have a random YouTube channel called Bones Knows when I feel like uploading videos and podcasts, I do, but it's not all the time.
Well, guys, it's been a pleasure to have you back on again after this extended period of 4 years and a bit. So thank you so much.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure to have
us. Bye.
Ciao.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.